Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help! Hello, everyone, and welcome to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold across the studio with buckets of charisma, George Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how are you?
Good. We're coming at you live tonight, which means if you know where George lives, now is a good time to break into his house. I'm afraid the only thing you might find is one of those putting return devices, though, where you put into it.
Don't take that.
And it fires it back out. If you do take it, I'm sure the batteries are fresh.
Don't take my TV. I'd be dead.
Yeah. You might get 20 bucks for that on eBay, right?
Exactly.
Good to see you.
Alex is feeling good today.
Yeah, he's here.
You know, George, I always love it when a guest brings pertinent information to the show. Our guest tonight, Mike, who's going to be on in just a minute, handed me something from the Los Angeles Times. I'd like to start with this little piece of information, that alcohol's death toll is just shy of 88,000 this year. The death toll from binge drinking and other forms of excessive alcohol use in the U.S. is just under 88,000. That's a big number.
It is a big number.
That is a big number. Tonight we're going to talk about when you are in trouble and you need intervention and you need to get into rehab and how difficult it is to do that and how difficult it is to get that done. We've got an expert on the show tonight who's an intervention specialist.
Say that again real quickly.
I can't. I should have rehearsed that.
Not only is he an intervention specialist, Bill, he's one of the best out there. And in as you know, Bill, from working around the field for many, many years, interventions don't always go well. And we always want to recommend a professional to do it. And there's a lot of reasons, and I know Mike will get into that. I'm really looking forward to the show tonight because of Mike's presence.
And, George, our heart, by nature, is it's allergic to truth. We just fight against it. We don't want to believe what's good and true. We don't want to believe God loves us. There's all kinds of problems our heart has. So when we're talking about changing and being transformed by the power of the Holy Spirit, which is what Real Recovery talks about.
It's what we talk about
every week. What we talk about, Georgie boy, is we have to get at the root of the problem. And my heart will always try to put its roots down into things that can't sustain me, because that's just the way I'm wired, by nature, by birth, by sin. And only through a transformation of the power of the Holy Spirit in your life can you start to want other things.
Well, I think the Holy Spirit is the one, Bill, that gets us to realize that we are in trouble. I think on our own, we just don't get that. We dig deeper, we try harder, and we make things worse.
Good point. And George,
thank you.
I think whenever you're confronting anybody with their behavior, it's always going to come up. We're always going to come up against a lot of resistance. Nobody likes being told they need help. And when it comes to people who are using drugs or alcohol, denial is the biggest problem out there, I would imagine.
And you're taking from me the one thing that's allowing me, in my mind, to keep going. And I'm going to come after you with everything I got. And if you're a family member, I know how to push your buttons, and I'm coming at it. Because you're going to take away from me the one thing that I need to survive. It's going to get ugly. And that's why you need a professional in there.
I agree. George, in Real Recovery, you know, we always love to talk about Scripture. We always love to talk about the transforming power of Christ in your life. We also like to talk about some of the calisthenics that go along with a good recovery program, which are the 12 steps.
I love how you put that we need to do our exercises.
That's what they are. That's what I see them as.
And you are so right. Last week we talked about step 4, and of course we're going to talk about 5 tonight. But I want to tie these two together a little bit. In 4, we make a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves, and we look at our resentments, our fears, and our sex conduct. Now, one of the reasons we want to look at the resentments is that we cannot have a resentment against a brother and love God at the same time. It just blocks us from the sunlight of the Spirit. So we want to get God's help to get rid of that, and we pray for people that are spiritually sick like we are, because you can't be mad at somebody that's sick, and it helps us after praying. Where can I be of service? Okay, now we get to 5 where we admit to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Where these tie together for me, Bill, a lot of guys I work with, and for me when I got into recovery, and still to this day I am in recovery, I resented myself for what I did. The amazing miracle that came to me is by working on my resentments for other people, the resentment I had against me went. I was able to forgive them and look on them as sick, and I allowed myself that same latitude. So when I get to five, and this is very important from a Christian standpoint, where we admit to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, by only one name can I get my sins forgiven, and it is appointed once to man to die, and then the judgment. Acts 4:12 says, by no other name are you saved. But here's where I want to go with this very quickly, with a little leeway. I look at Matthew 7:1. Do not judge others, for by the same measure you judge others, you will be judged yourself. I think there's a double meaning there. And the one that I want to get to is, I don't think God wants us doing his job of judging other people. We're supposed to love them. And I can't judge you and love you at the same time. I need discernment and I need God's help. But the other thing is, I think we're way too hard on ourselves sometimes, especially people that are in recovery. And so by the same measure I judge you, I am judging myself. And there's some grace involved here, that apart from Christ, we are messy, we are ugly, we are dirty, and we have no guidance. So give yourself some slack. And we talk about the idolatry, Bill, that addiction is really idolatry. We want to be our own God. If I don't forgive myself, and God does forgive me, he says in 1 John, that if you confess I'm faithful to forgive you, I'm holding on to something that God has forgiven me. So I want to look on that. And I know a lot of people we work with, Bill, feel really bad about what they did. Good, you should. You should feel bad about it. But there's a way to confess that sin, get forgiveness, and you know, grab your arms around the mercy and grace that's there.
I could have barbecued brats during that monologue.
Okay.
Seriously. I mean, it's well said. But,
okay.
But that was... On and on and
so,
on and on.
But I mean, what do you have to add to that?
Nothing.
I mean, I think it's
true.
We all know people that are in their adult age that have resentments against their parents. Maybe their dad was an alcoholic, so they're going to judge people and be angry about that. I know for me, my dad left when I was 13, got divorced. I was mad about that till I was 30. I think if you're going to judge other people and not forgive them, you're going to carry this judgmental, resentful attitude through your whole life and your whole recovery. And these steps enable us a way to get rid of that. That was my point.
It's a good point, George. Now, we're going to talk about intervention. Sure. Yeah, it's a great point. We're going to talk about intervention tonight, and we're going to also talk about the type of person that is in need of intervention. So let's dial back 29 years. You've had 29 years of sobriety, right?
Mm.
And our guest tonight is 39 years of sobriety, so that's between the two of you, that's 152 years.
And there's no brain cells burned out here, so I'm sure I can remember exactly where we're going.
So let me have you answer a couple of questions, George, that I have prepared in advance. don't ask about the math. George, here's a couple of questions. Now, 29 okay. years ago, you're in the middle
can
of...
Can we both have these? Is this a team?
No, this is just you. This is just you. I'd like picking on you a little bit more right tonight. So here's the first question I'd like to ask you. Did someone close to you comment on your use?
Well, of course.
Okay, so it was a lot of people were making comments to you. Okay?
Right.
And your response was defensive, am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you find yourself preoccupied throughout your day with using?
Sure.
So every day you got up, you thought, when do I get to use? When do I get to drink or use or whatever?
Okay. The whole cycle's getting it, using it, recovering from it, getting it again.
Okay. Was your home life unhappy at the time? Maybe not. Was it?
It wasn't great. You know, the consequences that come with heavy use are, you know, you're going to have problems. And usually relational problems hit first, then legal.
Okay. Were you in jeopardy of losing something work-related, or were you losing a job, or...
Got kicked out of high school.
Really?
Yeah, it was a private prep school, not the public one you and I went to.
Okay. Did you have to turn in your little blue blazer when you got kicked out?
I still got it.
Yeah, I figured you
did. I wear
it,
man.
Yeah, I figured.
And the penny loafers?
Yeah. Did you feel like you needed alcohol or drugs to have fun or enhance your social life?
Sure.
Okay. That's a no-brainer, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's nothing you would rather do, I think.
Okay. Did you hide or... your use or lie about how much you were using?
Yes.
Okay.
Should have brought my attorney to this. I don't like where we're going.
Yeah, I'm grilling you district attorney style here. Did you ever drink or use just when you were just by yourself?
Sure.
Okay. Did you have little episodes of memory loss from a result of drinking or using? Wake up the next day and go, what?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I figured. Okay, next question. Were you drinking to cope with some of the anger toward your dad or... the anxiety or depression, or did you just love to have fun and party?
I think it's all the above. I like getting high.
Okay. All right. That was kind of my question. So from based on how you answered all these questions, I would say you are a candidate for our guest tonight for an intervention specialist.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to bring him on, and we're going to see what he thinks.
I'm not quitting. Not going to do that.
All right. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex on the board. Thanks for being with us tonight. Be back in just a minute on Faith Radio.
Seems I've got to have a chance to see him every night I have.
Welcome back, everybody. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex on the board. You're listening to Real Recovery on Faith Radio. We are a show that talks about addiction of all kinds. And if you were once not a believer in Jesus and now you are, you have an old life. You have a past life, George, and you're probably still in recovery from a life of sin.
You are correct.
Our guest tonight is Mike Lewis, and he is an intervention specialist, and he has been instrumental in getting involved in so many people's lives and pointing them in the right direction and into rehab and recovery and the king of encouragement, I might coin that phrase tonight on his behalf. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
And you have a nice holiday, and you're back from the lake, and you've got a little bit of sun in the face. And
yeah, we had a wonderful time up at my daughter's cabin, and glad to be back.
Yeah, and you were talking at before the show started that you can do intervention 7 days a week.
I have been.
You've been extremely busy. 7 days a week, George.
There's a lot of people out there suffering, guys. It's really unbelievable. There's a lot of people that I relate that article, Bill, that I gave to you about the 88,000 people that are dying. And that's just from binge drinking and acute alcoholism. It's
right.
Not the car accidents. It's not the other extremes that that don't make the papers every single day, the suicides by driving a car into a bridge abutment at 100 miles an hour.
George, I was talking to Mike before you arrived because I was here on time. And he was as well. And he was talking about an episode with a woman that he was working with who had was dealing with a meth addiction. And I was so shocked by what he said that I can you repeat that?
I'd be happy to, Bill. I was called up to St. Cloud by a woman who wanted me to do an intervention on her daughter, a 22-year-old woman who had been a straight-A nursing student up in St. Cloud and had flunked out her last quarter of her senior year from nursing, meth addiction. The woman tried to sell me her one-year-old son for $100 to support her meth addiction.
Mm.
I told her mother to call child endangerment and the police, and it was hard for her to do, but the following time I was up there, she did call. The woman was under the influence again, and the third time I got a call from the daughter in jail at Wright County Jail saying that she'd like to meet with me. And she had pulled a knife on a woman in a bar, and they were going to charge her with a Class A felony and send her to jail for a long time.
Mm.
And I talked to the judge, and the judge was very accommodating and said if she would go into Adult Teen Challenge and clean up her act, that she would hold the charges in abeyance for 1 year, and if she completed the Adult Teen Challenge program, that she would vacate those charges based on her good behavior. And she did do that. She graduated from nursing school. And the big caveat there was if she hadn't had those charges removed, she could have never received her nursing license because you can't get a nursing license with a felony on your record. So it would have been a real tragedy for this young woman who was very bright, but this meth had taken over her life and was in the process of killing her and her family.
You know, I never did meth, but the guys we've worked with, Bill, down at the Army, a lot of them told me the first time they did it, they were addicted.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that?
That's the case. And so many of these small-town people, I mean, they're cooking it in the farmyards. They're picking up the stuff, making it, and it's devastating. It's devastating when it's doing to rural America. It really is.
Mm, how sad.
Oh.
So, Mike, talk about what the family looks like when they come to you and they say, we have to do an intervention on our loved one.
Well,
what kind of turmoil, what kind of pain, what kind of anger, what kind of at their wit's end when they come to you?
They really are. You can imagine how heavy that telephone is to pick up and call a stranger out of the blue and say, hey, I've got a problem with my husband, with my wife, with my son or my daughter. Can you help me? And after we make the introductions and I set up an appointment, I schedule a meeting with the family, all those family. And typically I ask the people who would come to this person's funeral? Who loves them that much would show up at the funeral? And I get those people assembled, and then we talk about the basic stuff is enabling. Why do you enable this person to continue their bad behavior? Why do you allow them to drink and use and not put a stop to it? And sometimes they just don't know that they have the strength and the power to stop that. They can't control the alcoholic or addict, but they can certainly change the dynamics in the family. And so once we understand that, and then we go through a process of some letters that we write to the individual and some other details that we work on, then we do the actual intervention. And you know, people lots of times think that going to treatment is a punishment. It's no punishment. It's a gift. It's a gift of love that we give to people, as we would if we're sending our child to the hospital for cancer or for diabetes or for MS. I mean, it's not punishment. It's an act of love. And that's what we try to convey to the family. You know, God does not make junk. He makes nothing but the best. And there's another force out there that is kind of working, and we need to overcome that evil and do right and get the Holy Spirit into our lives and say, hey, we can overcome this, and it works.
It is a gift. But when you're dying, the last thing you want to do is stop. Can you get somebody into treatment if you don't have a hook, if you don't have the job, if you don't have the marriage, if you don't have the house, if you don't have a lever? How do you get them in? Do you need a lever?
The lever is really important, George. It really is. But I just had a call today from a lady who has hooked up with an old friend since fourth grade, and he's been in treatment four times. Family is in New York. They don't want to have a thing to do with him. She doesn't want to have a thing to do with him anymore. He's all by himself. He just got out of detox, and he had a seizure in her car. And so she called the police, and they put him in Fairview Southdale. They cleaned him up a little bit, and now he's out. Nobody's here to care for him. And I said, well, I'll meet with him. I'll see if I can help the guy. But without the hook, as we call it, without the loved ones, it's so much harder. Because if we lose hope, we die.
Right.
We die. That's the bizarre nature of this disease. It's chronic, it's progressive, and it's always fatal if we don't treat it. And so that's what I try to do, is to reach out and help people treat it. This is a disease, and it can be arrested. We can't cure it. I'm a recovering alcoholic, not recovered. I'm recovering. Every day I have to work on my program to stay sober, and I'm blessed. I've got a wonderful wife and family, and they support me and love me, and despite all my little idiosyncrasies.
Well, I'm sure it's never boring.
No.
I think that's real important, Bill. We see a loss of hope. A lot of people pay the ultimate price and take their own life, and they feel they'll be better off doing that. Mm-hmm. Satan roars around like a lion looking for somebody to devour. And to me, we can do, Bill, a couple weeks ago on the program, did the CAGE assessment and the MAST of, you know, do you drink an eye opener or do you drink more than you intended? The one thing that I always go to is, the sign of addiction for me is, it's the one thing they're not willing to change, even if it's killing them. That I can't live without this. This has become my God. I need this. And that's
right.
Powerful, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly powerful. And that's the nature of the disease that we suffer from. And I just have to tell you, I am so blessed to be able to see so many miracles. I go to AA meetings and I see people that were chronic alcoholics. I started a program in downtown Minneapolis for homeless veterans. And we get together every week. And these guys have absolutely nothing, and they're getting sober, and they're staying sober, and now they're starting to do odd jobs, and now they're starting to the restoration of their self-respect. That's what happens in this program, is they can get better. But you have to let them know you care about them, and that's what AA is about, and the 12-step program is about, and recovery is about, is that you have to know that there are people out there that love you and that care about you, and we know that there's a higher power out there that will bring all of us the help and hope that we need to continue.
What about reasoning? When you're talking to someone who's stuck in addiction, reasoning seems to be out of the question. I mean, we'd like to think it would have some...
I've been writing a book, Bill, called Willpower Doesn't Work on Diarrhea. Reasoning right. doesn't work.
It I just mean, doesn't
have
work.
Have you ever tried to reason with a two-year-old?
I can't even reason with George.
Reasoning doesn't really work. I mean, that you have to assume when you reason with somebody that they're cognitive, that mm-hmm. all eight cylinders are firing. If they're not, you're dealing with somebody that's incompetent mm-hmm. at the time. And so it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The step that I always go to on that, guys, is too about insanity. Mm-hmm. That if you're going to continue a behavior that's killing you and yet you think that's the one thing that's going to sustain your life, that's insanity right there.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely
But it's
right.
powerful. And the delusion from the enemy is that you're doing fine, you're okay, you need this. And that's tough. We always got to look, is it possible I'm wrong? That kept me alive. Is it possible that you're wrong? And one of the things you do is show that you're walking the walk. You're not asking them to do anything you're not doing. That's yeah. powerful.
When you start caring about people, though, you start to show them Jesus. And when they start to see Jesus and feel Jesus, they're much more open to anything else you might have to say.
They are, but, you know, that's so hard for somebody that's in the depths of their addiction to make sense of. When I had two dear friends, Pat and Mike, took me down in the athletic club and did a little intervention on me, and they were scared because they thought I was going to throw them out the window. But they had the courage to do it, and they told me, Mike, you're going to lose everything if you don't quit drinking. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose your wife, your three kids, your house, your car, everything you have that you hold dear, you're going to lose. And the pain to me was the loss of my wife and my children. Mm-hmm. A car, a house, I didn't care about the material things. But the loss of my wife and my children was so painful that I said, I'll do anything to prevent that loss. And so that was the reason I went over to St. Mary's at the time and signed up. I didn't have the money. I didn't know where I was going to get it. I wrote a check. I had drinking money, but I didn't have recovery money.
Sure.
But, you know, that goes.
Who has that? Who has recovery money?
It's funny when you look back, my guess is the biggest blessing in your life was your alcoholism. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely it's fair. It's such a gift, and at the time I didn't recognize that. I hear people say, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic, and I understand that.
Didn't you hate that, though, at first?
At first I said, oh, that arrogant SOB, what are they saying?
Yep.
But, you know, when you wake up and you tune in and you listen to what God's message is to you, I love you, my child. And he stretched out his arms and died for us.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, it paid the ultimate price.
I mean, come on.
To cover every sin.
Everything.
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 Well, when you're not loving yourself and the thought that the creator of the universe loves you more than you do and you don't deserve that, it's too big.
Yeah.
But you see people coming that care, and, you know, you start feeling a little better, and I'll give this a shot. Maybe it does work, and you know what? It does. But most people don't make it, do they?
No, it's a struggle. It's, you know.
So it is a gift, but you got to do some work to keep it.
Well, you really do. You have to, as the guy says, you have to suit up, show up, and shut up. You have to go to meetings.
I got two of those
you
going.
Have to listen. Yeah.
I'm praying for the third.
Are you?
Yeah. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll have more with Mike Lewis. Be back in a minute. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. Thanks for joining us tonight. We're so glad you're listening. And in Psalm 97, verse 10, it says, let those who love the Lord hate evil, for he guards the lives of his faithful ones and delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Very assuring, isn't it, George?
It is.
Let those who love the Lord hate evil. So we need to find
hate evil.
We need to hate evil and find sin offensive. And disgusting.
Boy, that's a good barometer of where we're at spiritually. There's, you know, you hear a joke or something that's bad, but you still laugh. And so there's room to improve always, isn't there?
There really is. And, you know, if we don't hate evil and if we're attracted to sin, I don't know if we're paying attention to our walk.
Well, I think we need to look at our brokenness. One of the things that we were talking about with Mike is that, you know, the intervention at the point where people are killing themselves from their drug use,
but they don't want to give it up. Hey, maybe we don't understand everything, and maybe part of our problem is we think we do, and we are clueless. And once Satan takes hold and the disease progresses, it doesn't get better, does it?
No, it absolutely doesn't. It's suicide in the installment plan.
Mm.
It really is.
One day at a time.
Well, that's all we have. You know, that's all we have in recovery is one day at a time. And those that are still suffering, I mean, there's hope out there. And there's a lot of people that want to reach out and help. But, you know, people have to want it. We can't handcuff them and force it down their throat.
Gosh, what a contrast. I'm dying on the installment plan, Billy, day by day. And my Bible tells me that the mercies from God are new every morning. And Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own.
Mm-hmm.
There's a road to the right. There's a road to the left. And there's no in between here. And in recovery, we're talking about choose life. Don't choose death.
Right.
So you're in at that point, Mike. It's got to be a tremendous responsibility and a blessing where people's lives change instantly one way or the other. A lot of pressure, isn't it?
Oh, huge. Huge amount of pressure. And he can. We have to let him.
Mm.
Isn't that just well said?
Yeah,
it is. First three steps in a nutshell.
Yes.
I can't. Yeah. He can. I'll let him. And that he is Jesus Christ who comes in and transforms us through the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
We had talked a couple weeks ago, Bill, on the show. A guy said, Mike, that when we really need to run to God is when we run away from him. And I thought, gosh, I still do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think he's mad at me and I don't
probably
deserve
is.
It. And he
probably is.
And I know I don't deserve it. I know. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows when I'm naughty and nice, you know.
Right.
But that's our brokenness. And if you're listening out there and you've tried to quit before, most of us don't quit right away. It took me 7 years. I think you did quit right away, didn't you?
No. I mean, I drank for a long time. And then the intervention is what started it. I was 30 years old. And as I said, I had these guys that loved me enough to take a big risk. And I went over and signed up. And then I quit. And I've never had a drink since. But, you know, I thought about stopping, and I went to the Johnson Institute, and I went to one of them A&A meetings, you know, and tried to figure some things out. And I said, well, I'm not that bad. And, you know, and I was bad. And my wife told me, but, you know, she was my wife. And
sure.
It took an outsider to come, you know, a neighbor from across the street to say, Mike, you got a problem. You got to knock it off. And I listened to him. Because I was scared.
Okay. Mike, I have a question for you. Let's talk about loved ones who are feeling anger, frustration, hurt, embarrassment, and they're scared.
Mm.
And they're dealing with these emotions nonstop.
That's right. Yeah.
And the user continues to just go about his business, living in denial and rebellion, and they're dying. What wisdom can you give them?
Well, and that's a real problem with so many families out there that watch a loved one start to die slowly with this disease of addiction. You know, there's a program out there called Al-Anon, and it teaches people who are involved with the life of a addict to learn how to take care of themselves. And that's so hard for people to do. But Al-Anon, and you can find it by calling Inner Group in the Twin Cities, and they'll give you the locations and times of their meetings. But it's an incredible program for men and women and for teenagers whose parents are addicted, that it's a place to go and get help and understanding and compassion for the family members,
mm-hmm.
because everybody gets broken in this disease, and you have to know that there is help.
Mm-hmm.
There is help.
And you might find that they have the vocabulary to talk to you in a way that other people, like friends at church, just simply won't be able to
understand. They understand it, Bill, well, so much better, because they typically have been involved in the very thing that you're going through, and so they speak from experience. You know, We have wonderful ministers in this community that are so knowledgeable in so many things, but they can't be everything to everybody. And, and so they can lots of times refer you to people in Al-Anon or other groups. A lot of them meet in churches to help.
Yeah, and one of the important things, too, is when the person who is the addict or alcoholic, let's say they do get sober, and then everything's wonderful, and these people have been putting up with this, and they're hurt, and they're broken, and they're resentful, and they want to be happy, but they've got their own issues, and we just move on. Well, that's not fair either. Like, oh, everything's okay because he's not drinking now? Well, look at me. And so that is a problem, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. Huge problem. You know, and that's where the growth comes with not only the addict in recovery, but those people that are related to the addict that are in their own recovery, and they have to practice the 12-step program in their own recovery. And it's a job. It's this, you just don't drive through the minute car wash and get healed. It takes time and effort and work.
I can build a real good case for having resentments for people that use, and I'm the alcoholic here, but my family members. And part of the intro tonight was talking about the resentments. All the resentments I have are justified, but that doesn't matter. It blocks me from God. And then we get into that forgiveness part. Oh, now I'm supposed to forgive you because you're not drinking. That's a huge leap. But my Bible says if I don't forgive others, he won't forgive me. And that's a tough one. And those resentments build. And what do you do with it? I know I shouldn't have them, but I got them. We need help.
Here's the deal with resentments. If you don't deal with resentments, they're a great excuse to go back and drink again.
Yes.
Okay. And so you have to deal with the resentments. You have to. And for those in the family, they have to deal with them too. They have to, you know, if God can forgive us, who are we not to be able to forgive somebody else? Now, that doesn't mean we just willy-nilly forgive people, but, you know, in the eighth and ninth step, we made a list of people we wanted to make amends to, and then we make amends. For me, my amends was stopping drinking and trying to live a Christ-centered life. That was what I had to do to make amends. I said I was sorry 1,000 times. Sorry didn't mean a darn thing.
You bet.
But stopping drinking meant everything.
And there, yeah, excuse me, there's a lot that comes with that. My guess is now when you say you're going to be at a radio show, you do it. Not like somebody else here who got here a little late, but he caught more traffic coming back from the lake than he thought he was. But isn't that a difference? People can rely on us now.
Absolutely.
It is a difference. Billy, you see it all the time with guys you work with.
It's exhausting, George. Is absolutely exhausting. You know, I always say to them, don't promise, just prove.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't need to hear any more of your promises you're not going to keep.
There's a sanctity to a commitment you make. If you make a commitment, keep it.
Yes.
Consequences. When I talk to people in the intervention business, I talk about consequences. If you make a consequence, you have to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Highway Patrol has a consequence. If you drive 100 miles an hour down a 60 zone, you'll probably get a ticket or go to jail.
Man, my Prius doesn't go that fast.
Downhill it might.
Maybe downhill. So it's I very seldom meet guys that care about consequences. But I'm dealing with guys who are in the program or who have landed in recovery. They have not cared about consequences in their life.
Then people haven't carried out the consequence because...
Well, most of them are headed to jail or prison.
Well, okay, and that's it. See, that's to me, the ultimate consequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they talk about it as, so I got to go sit for 3 years. And they talk about it like that, you know.
Well, I caught a felony. I got to go sit.
I got to go sit for 3 years. I'm going, what?
A judge told me, Bill, when I was working at the Salvation Army, that if going to jail in prison isn't a consequence for you, there are no consequences that are going to change your behavior.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, for me, as a 26-year-old guy who was looking at going to prison, I would have rather been dead. Mm-hmm. That was the consequence. But it's still tough to stop because you think this time it's going to be different and I can handle it.
It's rough. You're like a messenger from God who comes in and talks to people. There's a guy that we both know whose funeral is Tuesday. Connie H. was one of those guys mm-hmm. for me, who basically sat me down, who had more game than I did, who had a better job than I did, who was more successful, and said, kid, I got more than you do. I've got more game than you do, and you're going to die if you don't change. Do what I do. And I did. And you're that for thousands of people in your career. How do you handle the people that don't make it? What? How do you handle that emotionally?
You know, Bill and I were talking about that. It's really hard. It's really hard. But, you know, I'm doing God's work, but I'm not God, certainly. And so, you know, I say, I can't, he can, I'll let him.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be the right time. And so if they choose not to take my help and get treatment, then maybe the timing's not right. And so I have to say, I'm not going to burn the file. I'll keep it there, and I'll do another intervention for the family if needed and if requested. I don't give up. I'm kind of a pit bull when it comes to that. I hang on. I keep checking in with the family. Can I help you? Can I do more for you? Sometimes they die.
Yeah.
They die. That's the sad part. That's what hurts. They don't need to die.
Is part of the disease, Mike, the rationalization, the minimization, I'll try to speak more clearly, of what the consequences really are, that people don't really understand what they're planned for? They rationalize it away?
I think that's true in a lot of cases, certainly in families, where families don't see the progression of the disease because it happens so slowly. If we were to see it, George, if you and I were to see the progression from 1 week to the next, we'd scream and yell and say, hey, that guy needs help today. But because it gets progressively worse slowly, the family doesn't see it. And so the family gets just as sick as the alcoholic does. And it's really a cunning and baffling and powerful disease, not for just the alcoholic and addict, but for the family. Because they don't see it sometimes.
So it seems normal to them. Then.
And that's what's scary, is that bizarre behavior is normal. You know, Ernie Larson, who I absolutely loved, what you live with, you learn. What you learn, you practice. What you practice, you become. And what you become has consequences.
Yep. We used to see Ernie once a week down at the Army.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I did too.
Well, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll have one more segment with Mike. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to My Faith Radio.
Almost went to work.
We are back. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex, Real Recovery. George, Matthew 12:30 says, anyone who isn't with me opposes me, and anyone who isn't working with me is actually working against me.
Yeah, and there's that verse in Mark that's kind of the same but a little different, where I think it says, if you're not against me, you're with me. But I would agree with the first part.
Yeah. In Ephesians 4:27, it says, do not give the devil a foothold. He loves the foothold, doesn't he?
Yep.
In Ephesians 6, it goes on to say, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the authorities, the powers of the dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So there is an enemy that has a deep desire to kill us.
Well, and I need the help of a spiritual being that's greater than that, and there is only one, and that's
mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if the reason I've failed at recovery before is I'm trying to do it on my terms and my way, and I'm going to fail every time. There's people that come into your life, maybe an interventionist, a counselor, your family. You go into treatment, works really well for a lot of people, community.
Mm-hmm. We need the courage to speak the truth, and we need a community of believers, players like Mike who can step up and actually be involved in people's lives in a professional diagnostic way and know how to do the right thing. Because I think a lot of us have tried in the past.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.
See if I can do it. Save a little money. I just got a crown, $1,200. Dennis says $1,200 for a crown.
Really?
Yeah. Said, how much for a tiara? Just pricing stuff out, George.
I thought you went to Costco.
I don't.
Okay.
I went to regular dentist.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look that bad. I mean, the whole side of your face is kind of swollen.
And black and blue.
Yeah, it's a good look, though. Yeah. It's kind of a rougher Bill Arnold tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So we have to endure hardship and be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer, like it says in Romans 12. And so it's a daily pick up your cross and take your thoughts captive to Christ.
I'm glad you talked about the prayer. In the 12 steps, there's third step prayer, fourth step prayer, ninth step prayer. I pray every day for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober. We're supposed to pray without ceasing. Just the fact, Bill, that I'm talking to God gets my mind off myself. Mm. Where can I help others? The greatest joy for you in your recovery is seeing other people get sober and working with others.
It is. It's the miracles. It's the people that were on death's doorstep and they've made a recovery and they are now loving, caring, contributing human beings that are functioning and now they're starting to help other people. And that is the miracle. And I'm here to tell you, I see these miracles happen every single day.
I love having you. Bill Arnold always tells me to not lose the awesomeness of God. I'm in church this morning. It's a large Lutheran church. I'm probably the only Irish guy in there. Yeah, I think I am. And I'm watching this guy give the message, and I realize, gosh, quit looking at your watch, George. This is a guy you used to party with that's sober, that is up talking about the love of God, and how we can't do what we want to do, but the yoke of Christ is easy and the burden is light. And that's a miracle right there, and you miss it because there was no way this guy would have been a minister. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me coming back. And I leave the church, and I'm thinking, how grateful. And Bill, you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
It's a real
guest on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in 5 years, we'll have him back. Maybe not.
Maybe
six,
not.
Seven.
Six or seven, yeah.
Six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
How about somebody's got a daughter, 20 years old. She's back living at the house. She got kicked out of school. She's got her boyfriend they don't like. She's got a lot of friends she doesn't like. The family doesn't like. And this time, if you come back drunk again, you're out of here. And she comes back drunk, but I want to keep my consequence. But at some point, I might enable them to harm themselves. How do you draw the line on that? Some of those calls are tough.
They really are tough. But if you're going to keep your word, there is a sanctity to your commitment when you say, don't come back here drunk. If they come back drunk, you have to say, you violated our agreement, and you have to suffer the consequence. And you don't have to scream and yell about it. You just said, you violated the consequence, and now you are no longer welcome at this house. I'm terribly sorry, but you can go down to the Simpson House. You can go down to Catholic Charities. You can go down to Harbor Lights. There's all sorts. I've got a book. You've seen it, George.
The Street Book?
The Street Book. Yep. It's a half an inch thick of places where you can go for food, shelter, medical care, everything you need. Society won't let you fall through the cracks. Not the kind of life you and I and Billy want, but, you know, there are people that are doing it, and it's a safety net. I see it.
Yep.
But you know what? Maybe that's the consequence they need to see to say, oh, my gosh, he was serious. He was serious.
That's tough to do, isn't it?
Well, sure it's tough. It's the hardest thing you ever have to do. But, you know, the Lord gave us choices, and you know, Satan's right there tapping us on the shoulder saying, hey, come on, let me show you an easier, quicker way. It's painless. It's more fun. It's pleasurable.
Well, I get that, and I will work you for another use, do anything I can to get that fair. And that's just it's a tough, sad disease sometimes that doesn't end well.
And you know what really scared me is your comment about the judge saying that sending somebody to prison where it's not a consequence is so frightening. I had a woman today I talked on the phone, and she chose going to Shakopee Woman's Prison rather than try to quit her addiction on her own. 3 years she spent in Shakopee Woman's Prison for crack cocaine. I go, wow, there had to be a better way. But there wasn't for her. I mean, she couldn't see it. I mean, she couldn't see it. So now she's going through a divorce, and she's got a felony conviction on her record, and she can't get a job. How sad.
I think the greatest evangelical tool in our society is the Department of Corrections. The threat or going to jail sometime, maybe that moment of mental clarity happens when the cell door shuts, mm-hmm. because we've all gone into jails to give talks, and some of us, like me, have been in there on our own. And there's no sound like that. And your freedom, it's a sudden slap in the face that it's over.
I was in the jail Saturday afternoon visiting someone. Mm. And you're talking to him on a telephone with a really funky delay. You could hardly hear it, and it's not very clear. And there's that thick glass. And, it's like, you know, 1 minute we're friends going out to eat, and the next minute he's behind glass. Mm. It's really strange, yeah.
Aren't you glad when you can leave?
Oh, I can't wait to get out of there.
And that's a nice jail, too.
It is a nice jail. Air conditioned, the whole thing.
Valet parking, got an espresso machine in the lobby.
Yeah, nice. I had a nice latte. Biscotti, it was good.
Now, we've had guys we've worked with that if they're used again, they got 10 years, mm-hmm. and they use again. I have great respect for the power of the enemy, Bill, the delusion and the insanity that we think we know what we're doing. There's a way that seems right to man that ends in death. Bill's got a quote from Proverbs that I love about, what is it about, you know, going your own way and then blaming God?
Yeah, it's I think it's 19:3 that a man will destroy his own life and then blame God.
Mm-hmm. And he gives us every chance to do that. And yet he's always there. You know, God said there's only two commandments. Love your neighbor and love me and keep my commandments. That's all.
If you love me, you'll obey me.
If you love me, you'll obey me.
Yep. So, here, Mike, here's what I was trying to remember, and I just found it. It's don't talk, just act. Don't say, just show. Don't promise, just prove.
Wow, that's right on.
Okay,
pretty
Dad.
Good, do I sound like your dad, George?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I think it's a good reminder. Don't talk, just act. Don't say, just show. Don't promise, just prove.
Well, that's... our report card, Bill, is what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Not what I'm saying, not what am I thinking, but what right. am I doing?
Talk
I
is
love
so
it.
Cheap.
You know, that's what kids are looking for today.
Is what?
Don't tell kids. Show kids.
Oh, yeah.
They're like sponges. I couldn't tell my kids to quit speeding when I had a Fuzzbuster in the window. Mm-hmm. I had to throw that away.
Interesting.
It's a little drastic. My car won't go that fast. I got a car like Bill's, so...
There
get,
you go.
Get a Prius.
Well, it's not that bad. But, you know, I think what we want to look at here for me is as we close the program is that there is hope. And as dark as it gets, Jesus is still there. He didn't move. We did. And he welcomes us back. And I think the greatest recovery story is the prodigal son. My son, absolutely. Who was dead, is alive, and he comes to us. And if you're listening out there and you have a relative, or maybe you have tried to quit using, and maybe you make it a little while and you go back and you're thinking, I can never do this. You're right, you can't. But he can if you let him, and it changes everything, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It life has never been better than without the use of chemicals and drugs in my life. And I can see it in you, George.
I can't. Anyway, Mike, you've been a great guest. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for
again.
Having me, guys.
I hope you've been encouraged by the program tonight. And if you are in a situation where you need intervention help, we'll post Mike's information on the website. And thanks for listening tonight. I hope you had a great 4th of July Independence weekend. I hope you're ready to face Monday. Make sure you get a good night's sleep and you'll be off to a good start. Have your quiet time in the morning. Good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.